Okay, today's daf is daf Nun Hey. We're going to start at the very, very bottom of Nun Dalet Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom. We were in the middle. The Mishnah had given a whole bunch of examples where shor and chamor or some animal is mentioned and not other animals mentioned. And we basically went through that all these cases really apply to all animals and not just the ones specified. And why did they specify? Because Dibera Katu Behoveh, which means the Torah gave basic examples of what was relevant, right? So it used a particular animal that was the general way that things would go with that animal, you know. So if you would have the chamor was carrying the stuff on him, so therefore that would be prika, would be with him, etc. And then in doing so, we talked about Shabbat, and by Shabbat we talked about the behemah, the behemtecha, and then it also said shor v'chamor, and then we darshan. Once we learn Shabbat is that way, we're going to learn from Gezeirah Shavah to all sorts of other ones. That's how we derived how we learned that each one was applicable to everything. So certain ones had their own drasha, and other ones were just learned out from Shabbat. In doing so, we compared the first Dibrot and the second Dibrot, the ones mentioned in Shmot and the ones mentioned in Dvarim. So now we're going to have another difference about the Dibrot. Okay, since we're on this, we're going to get off topic. Sha'am Rabbi Chanina ben Adil et Rabbi Chiya bar Abba. Mipnei ma b'dibrot harishonot lo ne'emar b'hem tov, u'b'dibrot achronot ne'emar b'hem tov. Okay, by kibud ava'im, in the second Dibrot it says, l'man yitav l'cha, so that it will be good for you, okay? Kabedet avicha v'et imecha, right? The thing you get for kabedet avicha v'et imecha, the Torah says, you will get l'man yarichun yamecha, you will get lengthened days. It says there that only in the Dibrot, in v'et chanan, does it say, L'man yitav l'cha. So the question is, why does Tov appear in the first Lucho, in the second Dibrot, and not in the first Dibrot? So now they're going to say, okay, so first of all, the assumption of this text is that the first Dibrot were the ones given the first time and then broken, and the second Dibrot in Parshat V'etchanan were the second Dibrot that Hashem gave after Moshe broke them. So this next question is going to be a little somewhat unclear, or the next statement. So anyway, right now they're going to say, why did it say Tov in the second and not the first? So She'elani im nomar behem Tov im lav, she'eni yodei im nomar behem Tov im lav. Sorry, one second. Sorry, he said, Amarlo, I started the wrong part. Amarlo, ad shata sho'alani lama ne'amar behem tov, is if you're going to ask me the question, why does it say tov in the second and not the first? Sha'alani im ne'amar behem tov im lav. As you asked, why does it say tov in them? I'm going to ask you, does it even say tov in them or not? In other words, how do you know this? She'eni yodea im ne'amar behem tov im lav. Kalech etzer Rabbi Tanchum ben Chanilai, Shaya Ragil etzer Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Shaya Bakiba Agada. In other words, why are you even asking me this? I don't even know for sure that it even says Tov in the second Dibrot. So now what this means is a big question among the Mefarshim. What do you mean? He didn't know that the Pasuk says that? So some people say, yeah, really, he didn't know. And he went to ask this person who was Bakiba Agada, because someone who's Bakiba Agada darshan's Psukim, and he knows all the Psukim, and he'll know. So that's one possibility, which on the one hand, the Mefreshim say, how could he possibly not know? On the other hand, you have to remember, the written text wasn't written. There weren't copies of Tanakhim floating around everywhere, and maybe he really didn't know. The second option is to say that the assumption of the question was that Hashem gave two sets of Luchot, and the ones in Shmot were the first set, and the ones in Dvarim were the second set. And his question is, how do we know that that's the case? How do we know that the first set, that the question wasn't, why is there a difference between Shmot and Dvarim? The question was, why was there a difference between the first Luchot Hashem gave and the second Luchot that Hashem gave? And therefore, he's saying, how do you know that what's written in Shmot was what was written in the first Dibrot, and what's written in Dvarim was written in the second Dibrot? And maybe that was his question.
Ki ein mukdam v'mukhar b'Torah?
It's not, I don't think it's because ein mukdam v'mukhar. It's written twice. It's discussed twice, but I'm trying to figure out before I saw this, was our assumption always that that's what it was? I don't know if that was our assumption, that the ones written in Shmot were the ones given first and the ones written in Is that agreed upon most people that that's the case? Is that what you would have thought before learning this?
You have to argue pretty hard otherwise.
Yeah.
Right.
That it's, yeah. Moshe went up.
Right. Moshe went up. He got the luchot, and that's the only real way to say it.
Except that he's repeating it.
See, right. I understood. I don't think I actually understood the text, though. It was once I read this, I had to, you know, you have to go back and think about what you really thought before. I think that then Moshe's just explaining what was in the Luchot in Dvarim, and he's explaining it in a bit of a different way. You know, he has a different version because, again, all of Dvarim has a different version of how he tells the story.
In which case, you would almost posit that the first set is more accurate, and the second is you may not be remembering correctly or something. But
okay, or not remembering correctly, but also stressing other things or. I don't know if you would say he's not remembering, and he's sort of, but paraphrasing, I think it's more that he has certain goals when he's giving the second Dibrot.
Well,
and
you
that,
assume
you know, when
you
he's
rely
describing
on the
them.
Accuracy of
right, that, it could be. It could be that the first would be more accurate. It's not clear that the second Dibrot said other things than the first Dibrot said, and it's just because they come in the Torah in two different things. So anyway, this is an interesting debate about that, but now let's talk about this Tov. So why does Tov appear the second time and not the first? So Azalagabe, so he goes to this Rabbi Tanchum ben Chanilai, who used to hang out with Rabbi Shob ben Levi, and who is Baki Bagada. He goes to him in Amarle, Mimenu lo shamati, I didn't learn from him, from Rabbi Shob ben Levi, Ela kach amar li Shmuel bar Nachum achi imo shel Rav Acha b'Rabbi Chanina. But I did learn from someone else. The Amar Lan, some people say avi imo shel Rav Achi b'Rabbi Chanina. Okay, whether he was achi imo or avi imo, whatever. Okay, what the relationship was. Ho il v'sofan lehishtaber. The reason the first luchot don't have the word tov in them is because they were eventually going to break. And, okay, so now the Gemara says, v'chi sofan lehishtaber my havi. So why? I'm Rav Ashi, Chas v'Shalom Paska Tova Yisrael. That if the first luchot had the word Tov in it, and the luchot had broken, it would have caused good from Israel to be broken, basically. Okay, it would have broken this, right? Okay, so we'll leave this for a moment. We'll go a little bit further, and then we'll go back and discuss. Amar Rabbi Yeshua, Haro'et Tet Bechalomo. If you see the letter Tet in your dream. Okay, this goes all the way back to the beginning of to the middle toward the end of Brachot. It was toward the end of Brachot about all the things you see in your dreams and what they're signs of. If you see this, it means you're going to be a Rosh Hashiva. If you see this, then someone's going to die. And all sorts of things. So if you see the letter Tet in your dreams, Siman Yafelo, my taima, Ilim Amishum Dichtiv Tov, maybe because Tet is a Siman for the word Tov. Ema, but you could say v'ta'atia b'matatei hashmed. Hashmad, I think it is, right? Hashmed. Okay. So, right, you'll be swept up with the broom of destruction. So there's a tet that's a bad tet. So you can't say, oh, tet is tov, but it also is this bad matateh.
Which we didn't have in Brachot. You didn't have...
Wouldn't have letters.
You didn't have counter-arguments. As I recall.
Is it true? I'm not sure. I think there were, actually, but I don't remember. No, but this, anyway, this isn't saying that you're... This isn't a counter-argument. This is trying to figure out why Tet is a simon of something good. Now, everyone agrees if you see the letter Tet, it's a good thing. Nobody's disagreeing with that. The question is, what is a simon? Is it because it's Tov, but then Tet could be something else? So then they say, b'chad tet kamrinan, right? V'tatia b'matate ashmed has a lot of tets in it, right? So one tet would be a siman for tov. But then you could say, ema tumata b'shuleha, right? That's in echa. I thought the tuma is in the, you know, what's the word? It's Jerusalem, right? In the hem of her dress, meaning everyone can see it. The tuma's out in the open. Tet bet kamrinan. It means, no, if you see the letters, now they change it. Okay, it has to be tet bet. That would be the simon for something good. But then they say, Ema tavu ba'aret shareha. Also in Echa it says, right? It's drowned in the, it's sharim, its gates are drowned in the aretz. Ela, ho'il upatach bo akatuv letovat chila. Because the first tet in the Torah is for the word tov. Okay? So, in Pasuk Dalet, it says, Vayara Elohim et Ha'or Ki Tov. And that's the first time the Tet appears in the Torah. Okay? Shemi Breshit Va'ad Vayara Elohim et Ha'or Ki Tov. Lo k'tiv tet. Okay, there's no tet in the Torah before. I didn't check this, but I assume it's true. There's no tet before there. Therefore, the first tet is a siman for tov. Okay, last thing, and then we'll go back a little. But Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, haro'eh hesped b'chalamo. By the way, this is Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, who they said is baki b'agada, meaning he darshens psukim. So here he appears, darshening. If you see hesped in your dream, chasu alav min hashamayim upta'uhu. It means, okay, so here it sounds like it's saying if you see someone eulogizing you in your dream, you would think that's a bad sign, right? But what does it mean? It means no. Chasu alav min hashamayim, they have rachamim on you, upda'uhu. Now, how do they get that? Hesped, we've seen this a bunch of times before, that he and chet are interchangeable. So hesped is chasu, it's what we call notary cone. You take the letters and you make... It's almost like abbreviation, but it's a little different because it's not, each letter is a different word. But chasu alav min hashamayim upida'uhu. Okay, the chet samach being the chasu, they have rachamim on him, and pida'uhu, they redeemed him. Okay, so now they say, v'hanemile biktava. It's not if you see someone eulogizing you, it's if you see the word hesped, don't think it's a bad sign that it's a hesped. It's a hesped that turns into a chasu upida'uhu. Okay, and you will be redeemed. So something bad is supposed to happen to you, but you'll be saved from it. Okay, what's this tet of tov and the tov and the word yitav lecha that they're dealing with in the Aseret Hadibrot? So I don't have a perfect answer, but I wanted to bring up a theme that appears in the Torah. The word tov doesn't just mean good, and it's okay, it's a good positive word. But the word tov is a very key word in the Torah because it starts out Breshit, Vayar Elohim Ki Tov, and Tov appears many, many, many times in this creation. And then at the end of Parshat Breshit, what happens? Vayar Elohim, right? Ki, the Yetzer HaAdam Ra, Kol Yamav, right? And it's the Tov and the Ra, okay, go to Eitz Hadat, Tovim Ra, right? The whole theme of Parshat Breshit is choosing between Tov and Ra, okay? If you follow this throughout the Torah, this theme comes up a number of times also. So it comes up, first of all, in Yitro. If you remember, there's this Vayihi ben Soah Aharon section in Parsha Bahalotcha, where Rav Soloveitchik has this whole thing about this is the turning point, and there it's the Gemara says it's a Sefer Torah b'fnei atzmo, those Psukim Vayihi ben Soah Aharon, and there's this thing that says there's really seven Sifrei Torah because the beginning of Bamidbar is they're all ready to go. Then you have these upside down noons that kind of have this Vayihi ben Soah Aharon, they're about to go into the land, and then Vayihi Ha'am Kimitonim Rabos Ve'Enei Hashem, right? And then all turns bad. And then you end up with the rest of Sefer Dvarim, which is a big mess, right? They all sin, and Moshe sins, and you have all problems. And then you have Sefer Dvarim getting ready to go into the land. So that's the seven Sifrei Torah. It's the, you know, five is Bamidbar, four is Bamidbar, five is Vayihi ben Soah Aharon, six is the end of Bamidbar, and then Dvarim. So if you look at those psukim, it's very interesting. It says right there, just before the upside down noon, there's this very weird section, which is Moshe says to Chovav, which seems to be Yitro, right? Chote Moshe, that Nosim anu el makom asher amar Hashem, oto eten lachem, lecha itanu, come with us, veheitavnu lach, ki Hashem diber tov al Yisrael. Okay, and then he says, no, I'm not going to come with you. And then he keeps going on. The theme Tov comes up a lot of times in this script. If you come with us, the good that God will do to us, He will do to you, and it will be good for you. Okay? There's a whole thing on this section, what's going on here. It's this big turning point right now. And really, I think the theme, by the way, this is just a separate thing, is that Moshe feels like he needs Yitro, and that's the part of Moshe's downfall. He keeps saying, I need you, I need you, I need you, and he doesn't realize that it's all about God, and that's where he starts going wrong. You know, he starts getting nervous about being a leader, and then it leads to his downfall with the rock and hitting it, anyway, that's a whole separate thing, but I wanted to show that at that big turning point, what's the whole, it's all about Tov, 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 all's going to be good, and then Vayiam Kimitonim Rabbein Hashem, and this Tov Vira theme comes up it's like at very key moments, and I think that's what they're possibly referencing in this sugya, is that Tov is the key to everything. It's not just Tov is a good word, but Tov is all that choosing between Eitz Hadat, Tov Vara, and all of the choice, Bechira Chofshit. And that's what it's all about. So if you see Tet in your dream, maybe it's a sign that that you're choosing the tov. In other words, it's all about man's choice in life. About, are you going to choose to do the tov or not do the tov? You know, do the right thing or not. So maybe that's what they're referencing here as a possible way of reading it. Okay. And then obviously it's centrality in the Aseret HaDibrot, Leman Yitav Lecha. Again, it's all about choosing to do the right thing and then things will be good for you. Okay. Amar Rish, B'chein Chayava Of Pachayotzeb. Now we're back to this other thing about the, right now we're in the, all these things, right, are relevant to the Chaya and the Chayot and the Ofot, not just the Behemot. So Amar Ish Lakish, Kan Shina Rebbe, Tarnagol, Tavas Upisioni, Kilaim Zebaze. Okay, Rebbe taught here that the Tarnagol, the rooster, the Tavas, the goose, and the Pisioni is a pheasant, are all Kilaim Zebaze, even though they come from the same general family. Okay, they're cousins with each other. They're within the same, what's the word? Species. Okay? They still are Kilaim Zebaze, meaning you can't crossbreed them. Pshitas. Now they say, what do you mean? This is obvious. They're different types of birds. Amrav Chaviva, Mishum Derabu Bahade Hadade. Sometimes if they're out in the wild, they'll reproduce with each other. So you might have thought that they're actually considered, since they're in the same species, how would you say?
Species.
Then you might say that that you could do Kilaim. Ma'u Detema Min Chadu, that we view this as one. Kamash Malan, that they're separate. Amar Shmuel, Avaz v'Avaz Habar Kilaim Zebaze. The goose and the wild goose are also Kilaim Zebaze. Okay, the domestic goose and the wild goose. Matkifla Rava Barachana Varavchanan, my time. What's the reason? Ilem Amishum Dehai Arech Kue V'Hai Zutar Kue. Maybe is it because one has a long beak and one has a short beak? If you're going to say that, Elamayata Gamla Parsa V'Gamla Taya. And obviously nobody thinks that, so we're going to say, if you think it's because one has a long beak and one has a short beak, then you could say the same thing about two types of gemalim. They also, one has a long neck and one has a short neck. There's a bit of a difference of opinion about what this kue means, okay? Some people say it means a leg, actually. Some people say it means different things, but I'll go with one interpretation, that's Rashi's, that says that the kue in the first is the beak, and the kue in the second is the neck. And obviously nobody thinks that these two gmalim are two different types. So why are you distinguishing between these types of geese? Elam Rabaye, here's the major difference between them. Zebe in the male form, zebe tzav mibachutz v'zebe tzav mibifnim. The wild goose has the testicles outside, and the domestic goose has them inside. They're not noticeable. And that makes the difference between them. Okay, why that would be so critical, I don't know. Rav Papa Amar, ha tu'una chada biyata b'shichla, v'ha tu'una kama biyata b'shichla. It's interesting that they dafka talk about the male and the female, you know, the things that specifically distinguish them. So he brings up a different difference, which is, I think it's the wild one, produces only one egg every time, and the domestic one, the female, produces many, many eggs at the same time. Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Amar Rish Lakish, Hamarbiya Shnei Minim Shabayam Lokeh. If you crossbreed, now here's a big, okay, this, we talked about that there's many types of kilaim, but the two we mentioned that have to do with animals are, number one, crossbreeding, number two, having them work together, right, like to pull the, we talked about plowing, to plow with a chamor and a shore together. That's what the pasuk says. So now there's a question, what we're talking about, laharbiya shnei minim shabayam. Can you crossbreed two fish, or does it mean not crossbreeding because you can't really crossbreed fish, possibly? Or does it mean using two fish, let's say, to do work, like drag something in the water, for example? Okay, maybe it's talking about that type of kilaim. So they say, if you do that, you're loke. My time, Amar Rav Ada Bar Ava, Mishmei De'ula, Atya Lemineu Lemineu Miyabasha. Because Lemineu appears, again, we're going back to the creation, right? It's Of Lemineu, right? So because it appears there with the Of, and it appears also with the Behema, so we learn that the same laws apply, okay, of Kilaim, right? It makes sense that we're going to learn Kilaim from the Bria story, because the whole idea of Kilaim is that, right, you're trying to create things in a way, you're trying to play God, so to speak. By Rechava. Rechava asked a question. Hamanhig bi'iza v'shibuta mahu. If you want to try to plow, let's say, or take a wagon, pull a wagon, and you use a goat and a fish. Okay? Are you allowed to do that, right? This seems like a very strange question, okay? This is one of those questions I was said as a joke last night that, what do you think the answer to this question is, right? Obviously, there's no answer, right? Nobody really knows, because who's ever doing this kind of thing? Okay, but anyway, they're going to ask this question. What if they're both doing work on a, you know, they're both pulling something? So, mi amrina and kevan di'iza lo nachit bayam v'shibuta lo salik liyabasha lo klum avid. Do we say since the ez doesn't go in the water and the shibuta, the fish, doesn't go on the land, that they're not doing anything together, really? Because, and I'm imagining, I'm not even sure exactly, but I'm imagining what's happening is it's being pulled half in the water, half in the, yeah, but on the land, and one's pulling one side that's on the land, and one's pulling the other side on the water. So do you say that's not really working together, because one's in the water and one's in the land?
Well, even more, I mean, aside from the ridiculousness of it, they're not yoked together. They have to be separate, whereas usually you're
right.
talking
they
about...
They are yoked together, right? Mm-hmm. That's true also. So anyway, they're saying, Odilma hashamiyat kamanhik, or maybe they're both actually, if it weren't for one of them, you wouldn't be able to pull it. So maybe they are working together. Matkif la Ravina. So first we have Ravina who comes in and says, wait a minute, you can't even ask this question. Because ela me'ata, chiber chitau seora biyado. Let's say a guy takes two seeds, a chita seed, seora seeds in his hand. Vizarach chita ba'aretz, usora b'chutz la'aretz. And he's standing right on the border of Israel and chutz la'aretz. Okay, now, kilaim, actually look this up because I was surprised by this. Kilaim, there's different kilaim. There's kilei akerem, kilei zraim, and kilei ilan. Okay, when it comes to kilei zraim, which is what we're talking about, it's the only one that's only noheg ba'aretz and apachutz la'aretz. Whereas kilei akerem and harkavat ilan, like to take a tree, crossbreed it, both those, mi de'oraita, are in Eretz Yisrael, but for various reasons, kilei akerem, because it's the most chamor, and because it even affects the fruits, whereas like the fruits are forbidden that grow from Kilei HaKerem, whereas Kilei Ezraim, it's forbidden to do it, but you're allowed to eat the produce. And the tree, I forget why, but they also were gozer midrabanan, that it also applies in Chutz La'aretz, whereas Kilei Ezraim only apply in Eretz Yisrael. So he says, if you take this and you put half in Chutz La'aretz and half in Eretz Yisrael, hachinami demachayev, you're going to be chayev kilaim, because you put these two zraim right next to each other, except that one's, you know, on the border on one side and one's on the border on the other side. You're going to be chayav, and obviously not. So therefore, here also, you know, how could you say one in the water, one in the land, we're going to join them together? So amre, hachi, hashta, but you're comparing two totally different things. Hatam Eretz Makom Chiyuva. Chutz La'aretz Lo Makom Chiyuva. There you're talking about it's not usher because across the border there's no Isser of Kilaim. So therefore we're not going to call this Kilaim. But Hacha Idi V'Idi Chiyuvahu. But in this case, both would be, right, the land and the water are both places where it's forbidden to do this. So therefore, you might think to combine them, and it's interesting, not only do they not answer the question, but they don't even say teku, right? They don't even...
They don't bother.
It was clear that it was just a theoretical question that they were throwing out there, okay? But nobody was really, I don't think, looking for a real answer. Okay, Hajan alach shor shenagat taparat. We're now going to start the sixth and final parak of our section of animals and your property damaging, okay? The next parak after this is going to be parak meruba, which is all about stealing. Okay, Maruba, Midat Tashlumei Kefal, Midat Tashlumei Arba V'Chamisha. Okay, we're going to get into other, you know, like man-related damages. Okay, this parak starts off with, we've been talking about shore all along, okay, and you're going to see right away, they're already going to start darshaning. Why did it start with tzon instead of shore? Okay, the immediate assumption is if we're talking about tzon, so tzon doesn't generally gore people. What kind of damages must we be discussing? Shein v'regel, okay? Either to lidros or more likely to eat. That's what we would think of when we think of tzon. We're going to get into review of some things we saw before about shmirah. What kind of shmirah you need for what type of thing. If you remember, we had a big three-way machloket. We're going to see it inside again. To Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Elazar about, I think it's Elazar, not Rabbi Elazar, if I remember correctly. Yeah, Rabbi Elazar, about what type of shmirah you need for a tam and a muad. Okay, so Rabbi Meir said, Tam, Muad, they both need Shmirah Me'ula. If you just do Shmirah Pchuta, like locking a gate that can that can basically won't open in a regular wind, but could open in something else. That's called Shmirah Pechuta. That's not enough. If you did that, you're going to be chayav, whether it's tam, whether it's muad. We have Rabbi Yehuda who said, you need Shmirah Me'ula only for a tam. It was the opposite, right? Because a muad, it says, V'lo Yishmerenu Ba'alav. And that's why you're chayav, because you didn't watch. But if you watched by putting up a regular, typical gate, that's sufficient, and you're putter. And if you remember Rabbi Elazar, what did he say? The only way to do Shmirah is sakin. Remember, he said you have to kill the animal. It's the only possible way. If your animal damages, if it's a shor muad, right, a muad. Yeah. Okay, if it's a shor muad, damages, you know, already get killed. Now, what's if we apply this to Shem V'Regel, what do we say about Shem V'Regel? There is no tam in muad in Shem V'Regel. Every animal is muad for Shem V'Regel. Okay? What we're going to learn today, though, is does that mean that if we take Shein and Regel and we say Muad by Shein and Regel is equal, right, Muad by Shein and Regel, which is any case of Shein and Regel, so I'll put the Muad in parentheses, is equal to Muad of Karen, right? That's what we're assuming, because a Muad of Karen only becomes a Muad after he gets warned three times, because we don't expect him to go out and damage. But Shein and Regel, since the damage is expected, the owner is always Muad. However, the question is going to be, do we treat them exactly the same when it comes to the issue of Shmirah? Do we apply whatever we think of Shmirah of the Muad, right? Whether it be Rabbi Meir, who thinks you need Shmirah Me'ula, Rabbi Yehuda, who thinks you need Shmirah Pechuta, and Rabbi Elazar, who thinks, we're not going to really get into Rabbi Elazar, but who thinks you need Sakin, right? Would he then say the same? Right. So the assumption is Rabbi Elazar probably wouldn't say the same about Shem V'Regel, because that would mean you'd have to kill all your animal, you know, that you're... But Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, would they say the exact same thing when it comes to this? Okay, so that's the intro to what we're going to do. Hakones tzon ladir. So you put your tzon in their pen. V'na'al b'faneha kara'oi. And you lock it kara'oi. Kara'oi means you put up a gate that's protected from a typical wind. V'yatz'a v'hizika. And the animal somehow gets out and damages. Patur. You're patur. So who does this sound like? Rabbi Yehuda, who says that it's enough to do shmirah p'chuta, and then you're okay. Okay, but that's only assuming that we're going to equate these two things and say that they're exactly equal. Lona al b'faneh kara'oi v'yatzah v'izika chayav. Okay, this makes sense, right? If you don't do this shmirah that you're supposed to do, and it goes out and damages, you're chayav. Nifritza b'layla. Let's say the gate gets opened at night. The assumption is at night, if the gate gets open, two assumptions. One is either you didn't know about it, okay, and therefore you didn't see, and therefore you're not responsible.
But you did lock it properly?
You locked it properly, but somehow it gets open. You know, maybe, I don't know, something comes crashing down, breaks it. Something happens. The other reasoning was not that you wouldn't know, but I forgot one of the other reasons given. Right, that's what Rashi Tosfot says. Inami balayla filu no dalosh nifritzavi yatzav beima. Right, Tosfot gives both reasons. He says, if you look in Tosfot, he says, in other words, either the assumption is during the day you're going to know right away because everyone's going to see and someone will let you know, or the assumption is that balayla filu no dalosh nifritzav. Tosfot says viyatzav beima. We don't expect you to go out running at night and trying to find your animal in the dark. Okay? So, if nifritza balayla, osha pritzu alistim, or robbers came and broke down your gate, v'yatza v'hizika patur. Okay? So, now here's an interesting distinction. If robbers knock down your fence, break into your house, and your animals get out, so you're patur. And not only that, but the robbers also patur. But hotzi'u alistim, but if the listim actually took the animal out, then listim chayavim. It's interesting. You might think the listim should be chayavim because they opened your door and therefore let your animals out. And who let the dogs out, right? It's like, okay, so if they actually take the animals out themselves, do they assume responsibility? Hinicha b'chama. Let's say you left them in an area that was very sunny. Now, what's an animal going to do when it's sunny? He's going to do anything he can to get out of the sun. Oh, shemsara l'chayres shotev katan, or you put responsibility in the hands of someone who can't be responsible. V'yatzav v'yizika chayav. Okay, then if the animal gets out, you're chayav. Misara leroeh. Okay, we're going to understand this now according to the Peshat. We'll see in the Gemara later. I think in tomorrow's daf, it's not really understood this way, but we'll read it this way right now. If you pass your flock on to somebody else, a different roeh, nichnas haroeh tachtav, he assumes responsibility, you're no longer responsible. I'm going to keep repeating this, but again, it's all, right, the listim, it's a matter of who's, if there's someone else who we can put more responsibility on than you, then you're relieved of responsibility. Nafla legina, let's say your property is high up, and the animal falls out of your property, and as you put up a fence like you were supposed to, and he somehow fell out of your property into someone else's gina, vinehenet, and he eats food. If you remember, we had this before with Shane. He eats food, and you now no longer need to feed him all that food. Mishalemet masha nehenet, right? There's a difference between masha nehenet and masha zika. So if he benefited, there's two ways he could have benefited, by the way. One is by eating, and one is, let's say he falls, and it softened the blow, and he didn't get injured because he fell onto your fruits, okay, or your produce. So what he got benefit from, mishalemet masha nehenet. But if he went down, not because he fell, which we assume is onus, but if he actually, on purpose, jumped down into somebody's field, so then you have to pay damages, not just what you were nehenet. Now, how do we evaluate damages? There's going to be a bit of a difference of opinion here. Shamin beit se'abo tasadeh, kama hita yafa, v'kama hi yafa. Okay, this is what we saw before, that you figure out the amount of property that there was, how much it was worth before this section got ruined, and how much it's worth now that the section is ruined. Okay? And then instead of saying, how much did he ruin, we say, what was it worth before if someone wants to sell the field? What is it worth now? Which is obviously going to be a smaller amount of damages than if you actually assess the damage of what he did. Because if you take the entire property and you subtract a certain area, that's not going to necessarily be equal to the exact damage done on, you know, if you count those, let's say you add up the amount of those fruits, if you could sell them, what it would be. So we go by the smaller amount. Rabbi Shimon Omer, achla perot gemurim, mishalem perot gemurim, im se'a, se'a, im sata, im sata. Rabbi Shimon says it depends. What Tanakama says is true only if the fruits weren't ripe yet. But if the fruits had already ripened, then we evaluate it based on how many fruits he ate. Then we're going to evaluate it based on the exact value. If they weren't ripened yet, then we're going to base it on the value of the field minus the amount that it's now worth less of. Okay, now we're going to go back to the first case about Na'al b'faneh kara'oi. Tana Rabbanan. Ezehu kara'oi ve'ezehu shelo kara'oi. So now, right, I already said it, but Gemara is going to ask, what does it mean kara'oi and not kara'oi? Delet she'chola lamo beruach mitzuya. Zeu karaoi. Sheinai chola lama beruach mitzuya. Zeu shelo karaoi. A door that can stand up in a typical wind, that's fine. That's your karaoi. And if it can't stand up in a typical wind, then that's shelo karaoi. According to this interpretation, right, that's going to be called shmira pchuta. Because it's basic, very basic shmira. Amar Rav Meni bar Patish. Man tana muad de sagele b'shmira pchuta. So who's the one, if we're going to say shein v'regel is muad, right? So who's the one who says that muad is sufficient for shmira pchuta? And I'm already showing you that's going to be Rabbi Yehuda, because Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Elazar both think you need higher level of shmira for a shor muad. So Rameni Bar Patish says man tana muad sagele b'shmira pchuta. Rabbi Yehuda he ditnan. Okay, here comes our Mishnah that we saw before. Ksharub ala b'mosera v'na'al lefanav karaoi. If you tied him up with the reins and you put up a gate like you're supposed to, v'yatza v'izik echad tam v'echad muav chayav. Divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir actually thinks you're chayav if you're na'al b'faneh karaoi. So this Mishnah can't be Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Tam Chayav, Muab Patur, Shenemar, Velo Yishmerenu Ba'alav. Right, he says the Pasuk Lo Yishmerenu Ba'alav only appears by Muad, and therefore Muad's going to be Chayav. If Muad's going to be Patur if he did the basic Shmira, whereas we're going to make a Tam Chayav. V'shamor Huzeh, right, and they said Lo Yishmerenu Ba'alav, and this one is Shamor. He did what he was supposed to do. Rabbi Elazar Omer, Ein Lo Shmira Ela Sakim. So now we're going to say, this must match Rabbi Yehuda. That's the first reading. Now we're going to say, okay, and this is going to take us to the end of the daf, and we're going to just prove it. Afilu tema Rabbi Meir. You could say Rabbi Meir, who needs a shmirah mu'ulah by a shor mu'ad, would say that by us, in shem v'regel, shmirah p'chuta is sufficient. Even though by a shor mu'ad, you can already start to think where this is going. Because even though an animal is mu'ad for shem v'regel, it's not the same as a shor mu'ad who's gored someone with the kavana lahazik three times. That kind of animal is what we call a violent animal, and you better watch over him.
This is regular behavior.
That's different than typical behavior of an animal that he might eat your food, right? So while we compare it to one extent, because even, right, eating your food, while he's supposed to eat your food, so you got to watch your animal. On the other hand, it doesn't necessarily mean he needs shmirah meula, okay? And another difference is, well, we'll talk about at the end, is that the shor mu'ad of the three times, the owner's been warned three times, and he's had warnings, and therefore we have expectations of him at a higher level than this animal, which has never been warned. Now, you might say it doesn't need warning, but it also hasn't been warned. It hasn't been like the animal's done something bad. So now we're going to say, Afilu Tema Rabbi Meir, Shane Shen V'regel Da Torah Miata B'Shmiratan. Shen V'regel is different because the Torah in general is more lax with their shmirah, with the expectations. Da'amar Rabbi Elazar va'amri la b'matnita tana. Okay, Rabbi Elazar says, and some people say in the Mishnah it says, in a Braita it says, Arba'a dvarim ha-Torah miyata b'shmiratan. Ve'elu hein, bor, ve'esh, shein, v'regel. Okay, these are four things that the Torah required less shmirah for them. Okay, now how are we going to see this? We're going to darshan from all the psukim. Dichtiv. What does it say? If you open a bore or you dig a bore and you don't cover it up. Hakisau patur. But if you just cover it up, that seems to be sufficient. Now, covering up a bore is certainly not a high level of shmirah. What would be the best level of shmirah for a bore? Filling it with dirt, getting rid of the bore, right? In other words, making sure it's solid ground. A cover, we know very easily, can be picked up by someone, can be knocked over, can be, we saw about, you know,
eaten by worms.
Could be, right, eaten by worms, okay? All sorts of things. The gamal can maybe break it, even if it's good for the shvarim, we saw that. So there you see it. Eish, tichtiv, shalem yishalem hamavir et habeera. Now, the assumption is that these words, hamavir et habeera, are extra, right? Obviously, what do you mean? Shalem yishalem, obviously, who's going to pay? The mavir, who else would it be, right? The person who burned it. So what do they learn from here? Ad avid ke'em mavir. It must be that you did it like someone who lights up a fire, meaning you didn't do enough to protect your fire, okay? It's only if there was more intent than not, okay, right? You can imagine there's different levels of fire. Something caught fire and you tried to put it out, but you weren't successful. Or in other words, what they're trying to say is unless there's real Shia here in some serious way, you're not really, unless you could be called really a mavir, then we're not going to make you responsible. Shein dichtiv ubi'er b'steacher. If you remember those psukim said ubi'er b'steacher, we darshan that that's shein v'rega. We're going to see the drasha again here. But what are we learning? Ubi'er b'steacher. Ad avi ke'ein ubi'er. In other words, it has to be, you did something again with intent. Bi'er is, you did it on purpose. Regel dichtiv. Okay, so and again, the assumption is the owner took the animal to graze in someone else's yard, basically. And that's when you're going to be chayav. But if he was shamar shmira p'chuta, it would be sufficient. Regel dichtiv v'shilach. Ada'avi ke'em v'shilach. Again, you send your animal out to go trample something, right? So unless you didn't, if you didn't send your animal out, but you did shmira p'chuta, and the animal somehow got out, well, then you're not responsible. Okay, now they're just going to darshan for us. Vitanya, how do we know the v'shilach and ubi'er b'steacher is regal and chain? V'shilach zeh regal, v'cheinu omer m'shachei regal hashor v'achamor. There we see the word v'shilach, right, the root, shalach, connected with the regal of the shor and the chamor. And ubi'er zeh hashem, v'cheinu omer k'asher yav'er hagalala tumo. That means until it continues to finish eating, basically. So again, you see the word bi'er with shein. Okay, this was a chazara on what we did on the first daf. Okay, so now, that just those two lines, those drashot, but before that, we had these drashot that show that those four things, so even though it's mu'ad, and even though Rabbi Meir holds it in mu'ad, you need shmirah mu'ulah, that's only mu'ad by Karen. But when it comes to shein v'regel, there's a lesser level of mu'ad, and even Rabbi Meir would hold shmirah p'chuta is sufficient. And therefore, you could say that our Mishnah also holds like Rabbi Meir. And now we're going to prove it. Amar Rabba, Matnitin Nami Daika Dekatane Son. Ah, you can also, this goes back to, I already prefaced this when we started, but the fact that it says Son. Michti Bashur Kaskinan, Va'ate Nitne Shur. In other words, until now we've been dealing with shur. So why all of a sudden did we switch to tzon? Lav mishum da Torah miyata b'shmiratan. Lav mishum dekan keren lo k'tiva ba shen v'regel hu dekhtiva v'kamash malan de shen v'regel de mo'adin hu shma mina. Okay, what exactly this means, we'll go into this right now and we'll finish up with this for today. He says, the fact that we switch from shur to tzon must be on purpose. What's it trying to tell us? That specifically, hakones son ladir, as opposed to a shur muad, so if you put your shur muad in al karaoi, we wouldn't necessarily agree that that was sufficient, because Rabbi Meir would disagree. But it says son to prove to you that we're trying to say dafka son, everyone will agree that shmirah pchuta is sufficient. Okay, that's the first thing he says, okay? So, lav mishum da Torah miyata b'shmiratan, that's enough to have less. This next line is a little more complicated. Lav mishum dekan keren lo k'tiva ba shein v'regel hu dekhtiv ba b'kamash malan de shein v'regel de muadin hu shma mina. What does it mean, de shein v'regel de muadin hu? What do you mean it's muad? Muad doesn't tell us anything. Muad would tell us it's like keren, right? You understand? They're trying to say, it's specifically not saying keren, it's trying to shein v'regel to say there's a difference. So why does it say muad? So some people say, this also goes back to something I said before, that they're muadin. Now, you could say this in two ways. Maybe they're muadin, but they're not kavanatan lahazik. In other words, they're trying to distinguish between a muad, the kavanatan lahazik, and muad she'en kavanatan lahazik. The problem is it doesn't really say anything about kavanatan lahazik. And as you could say, the difference is because there's no intent to actually, right, like the way we always say a shor muad. He's violent. You really have to protect him. This all makes very logical sense. This all makes a lot of sense. I was going to say something else that came out like that. This makes a lot of sense because this is violent act, and therefore for a violent act you need a much higher level of shmirah. And this is a non-violent act. Even though it's non-violent, though, it's expected, right? So if something's expected, well then again, maybe you need a higher level shmirah. But now we're going to say again that maybe what it means here, demuadin, muadin means they're warned without a warning. In other words, right, that goes back to a different difference I said before, which is here the owner was warned. These guys are inherently warned, but that's not the same as the owner getting three warnings, basically. And therefore, the owner getting three warnings would also make a higher level of shmirah than these animals that don't need warning. They're already inherently warned, and therefore, we might not need the same level of shmirah. Either way you look at it, the wording is somewhat different, because if you or I were wording this, we'd say, kamash malam b'shem v'regel, instead of saying, demuadinhu, we'd say, need shmirah pchuta. You know, it's sufficient to have shmirah pchuta. So that would make a lot more sense. Okay, I'm not going to start up here because it... we'll start. The next thing is a whole new thing, and it continues. So we'll get into these four things, and then they all get darshan in the next stuff. So we'll get into it tomorrow.